Hi, everyone.
My name is Mary, and I am a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon. I don't even know where to begin. The very first thing I want to say is thank you so much to the committee. Everything here is so beautiful. I was here, I'm going to tell you, probably 30 years ago. And it was beautiful then, but when I think today, and you've made me think about this all weekend, who I was then and who I am today, it's overwhelming for me. My higher power is certainly here. My higher power has spoken through you for many, many years for me. And when I'm here, I can feel that. I'm sure I don't have to tell you this is intimidating to be up here. I started thinking about all this weekend while I was here. And one of the things that I thought about was in the very beginning when I started coming down on, there was this joke. And the joke was, when somebody dies, their life flashes before them. And in Al-Anon, someone else's life flashes before them. And I only tell you that because I can tell you today, this weekend, my life has flashed in front of my eyes. I want to thank Harold from last night. I know he's not here, but what a reminder he was to where we came from and where we are today. The committee has been just absolutely spectacular. Between Carol took over on Friday, I'm not used to living like this. I've been taken care of. Last night I was turned over to Martha, and it's like every little whim is being taken care of. I'm just not used to this. What I can tell you is, God bless you, Marty. I can't wait till you're up here. I was not born into alcoholism, not in my immediate family. Neither of my parents were alcoholics, and they were both, after I came here for a very long time, almost everything I tell you, I did not know when I came in here. I know it today because I kept coming to meetings and I kept looking at myself. And one of the things I can tell you is I was not raised in an alcoholic home. However, both parents were adult children, and my entire extended family drinks a whole lot. My cousins, who I grew up with, that's what they did, they drank. Drinking was a part of life as far as I was concerned. And I will tell you, you will hear at some point probably that when I came in here, I was told it was okay to love an alcoholic. Well, let me tell you, I loved them all. I did. I'm still close to all my drinking cousins. It's very, very close to them. I can love them unconditionally today. I don't care who they are or how much they drink. I do love them. Anyway, so I wasn't raised in alcoholism, but it was all around me. My favorite uncles were all. I had one uncle who used to try so hard to teach me how to drink, and he called me Muggsy. And he would say, Muggsy, just don't put any mix in it. Drink it straight on the rocks, and then you won't get sick. And I just didn't like it. It wasn't because I didn't try, let me tell you. I went to Catholic grade school. And in Catholic grade school, I did fine. There were really no big issues with Catholicism back then. There really were not. When I left, I begged to stay. I wanted to go to public school. When I left, I did 8 years of Catholic. And I wanted to go to public school when we had moved, so they let me. And I'm going to tell you, from junior high on, I took off. I got to that public school, and it was like, oh my God. I mean, they talked in the halls. They did all kinds of carrying on. They had water balloons. They were, I mean, all this just total lack of, it was chaos. And I loved every minute of it. I started loving chaos at a very, very early age. I can tell you, by the time I was 16, I was married and had my first child. When I was in, obviously, junior high, the bad guys loafed on the corners. They were up at the pool. I wasn't allowed to go near that pool. My father told me if he ever caught me, even on that street, I would be grounded for the rest of my life. Well, where do you think I went every time I got out the door? I headed straight for that corner. These guys drank, they robbed houses, they did all that stuff, and they were cool. That it was one of them that I married, obviously, and had my first child too. We weren't married very long before number two came along. I had two children with him. And I remember when I delivered the first one, we were leaving the hospital. It was a Catholic hospital, and this nun's walking us out down. I don't even believe I remember this now. Anyway, we're coming down the elevator, and this nun says to my parents, "She'll be back next year." And I thought, "Oh, you smart aleck." Yeah, well, there it was. My son was born about a year later. Life went on. He drank, and his mother drank. And we moved in with them. I'm sure I don't have to tell you, we didn't have a lot of money. We moved in with his mother, and him and his brother took turns dumping her beer. And when she drank, she got really mean. So I would talk with her during the day when the boys weren't home and explain to her the damage that she was doing. Didn't she understand? And you know what? That was the beginning of my career to change alcoholics. It was just the beginning of it. He drank. I started getting tired of his drinking. I started going out with the girls. I'm sure I don't have to tell you, I was going out to bars. I was in bars before I was even legal to drink, and I had two kids before I was legal to drink. It didn't take very long before we were divorced. I was 21, and now I could party. It was my turn. Spent our time in bars, and I'm sure you know where my next husband came from. I've had a couple alcoholic husbands. My progression, you know, they talk about the disease of alcoholism, and one of the things that I have to say, and especially listening to when I listen to you guys lead, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. I would be out there crazy as a bedbug still. And believe me when I tell you, I was crazy. You didn't make me crazy, even though I thought you did. We were out in bars, and I found number two. My first husband drank, and he worked. The second husband drank and did drugs, and not so much on the work part. So I got a career, and I supported us and the kids. And I'm going to tell you, we had this happy little family that I created. It was all me who made this look good. My daughter cheered. My son played football. We were at every game. We were just this happy, wonderful little family. And I'm going to tell you, if you could have seen us behind closed doors, you never would have believed it. And when I think about how many people at those games and different things that we had, the people attended with us, how they talked about what a perfect little family we were, the secrets that go with alcoholism. And I remember I called his father one time, and I said to him, when I first met him, I'm going to back up a minute. My first husband had a brother, and the two boys, the brother got married, and his wife divorced him same time I divorced mine. So we moved in together. What a pair we were. And when I met this next husband, she kept saying to me, "Can't you see? He's just like her husband, her ex-husband." Well, nah. And everybody said, "You're such a perfect little family. He's so good to the kids," all that kind of stuff. Well, he was one of the kids. I hate to say that. He had a ball with the kids. I worked. They played. That marriage really didn't last very long. During that marriage, a couple things took place. I got very sick of the lifestyle. I thought that I was going to get married, and we were going to have this white picket fence, and we were all going to live happily ever after, and especially when he was good to the kids. That was just the answer. That marriage didn't last very long, and during it, I owned a home by the time I married him. And during it, he wanted to move into a bigger home that had a pool. And of course, I was going to make this work. whatever it took, I was going to make this marriage work, single-handedly, believe me. Anyway, so we moved into this great big house, built-in pool, on and on and on. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you, I was left with the bills and all the stuff that went with that. We divorced. And I called his father during, you know, the chaos when he wouldn't listen to me. And his father said, "You knew exactly who he was when you married him." And you know what? Yeah, I did. I saw it. I mean, I had no idea what alcoholism meant. I mean, I remember saying to him, "You're an alcoholic." I didn't even know what that meant back. I didn't know what that was. Anyway, time went on. Debbie and I partied. She moved in with me because, of course, she had nowhere to go either. And I took in strays. I was always taking in strays because I could fix you. I could fix anybody. When I think about the arrogance of who I was, it just, oh, my God. And not to mention, while I'm giving you advice, my life is so unmanageable. I mean, I'm on number two, and he won't listen. And I'm telling you what you should do with your life. Tell me that's not crazy. We lived together for a while, and I met my God, is what I'll tell you. His name was Gene, and I took one look at him, and I knew this was it. Everything was going to be okay. I came home, I got involved in a business. I had business partners. They asked me to become a partner because I knew the business side of it. By the way, I never finished high school. I loved listening to Harold last night. He also reminded me that I changed my name, too. But anyway, so I met Gene. And my business was in Louisville, Kentucky, and that's where he lived. He walked in, now this is going to shock you, he didn't work. And his mother worked for me. She was one of the managers. And he came through the door, and she wanted him to do some work. I was looking for somebody to paint the offices and somebody, you know, to do some handiwork. And she said, "Gene doesn't work. He would be happy to do this." Okay, we'll tell Gene to come in. Gene walked through that door, and that was it. That was it. That was the end of it right there. And she said to me, "Please don't. Please don't." And his own mother told me, he will come through your life like a tornado, and he'll leave me to pick up the pieces. I'll be left to pick up the pieces. She was crazy. She didn't know what she was talking about. And we moved on. When I first came in these rooms, they told me I should pray, "Our Gene who art in heaven." And they were not kidding. Whatever it took. Now, by this point, I'm a two-time failure. And I'm not going to be a three-time failure. That's not going to happen. I'm going to make him be what I think he should be. He was not interested. We were together for a little while. And he came to me one time. And, you know, I needed to be needed. Nothing meant anything to me more than he needed me. My first husband, I will tell you, his father died, was buried on his 16th birthday, and that was my draw right there. He really needed somebody. Number two didn't need anybody. But anyway, so this one came to me very early on, and he said, and I knew he did drugs, and I knew he drank, but he was a big guy, so I couldn't tell. And I was used to falling down drunks. They were drunk. They slurred. All the signs were there. This guy comes to me after a very short period of time, and he says, "I really love you. I want to be with you, but I need to tell you something. I need your support. Will you go with me to GA? I have a gambling problem." Well, of course, my God, that was my calling. That's what I do. I fix people. So we set off and we went to GA. And here's what I can tell you about that. The night that we went to the only GA meeting I ever went to, it was an anniversary. And these people were sitting around this big table, and it was this big deal was going on. And they would say, they were couples. And the spouse or the other half would say, "Hi, I'm Mary, and I'm the wife of a compulsive gambler." And it came my turn, and I just looked at everybody and thought, oh, not me. I started crying, and that was the end of it. He didn't need to be there. There was nothing wrong with him. So I tell you that because I progressed. That's the whole thing that I see today. I went from someone who drank to someone who drank and did drugs to someone who drank, did drugs, and gambled. That was a long haul. And I remember coming home from Kentucky one time. My business was in Kentucky, which is where his family was, his mother was. And I remember coming home, I had a card club back in Pittsburgh, and I walked in to play cards, and I said to everybody in the card club, they all knew who I was. They all just knew I was gonna do what I was gonna do. I walked in and I said, this man's gonna bring me to my knees. Well, let me tell you, he did. He really did. Trying to get him, well, pick one. Sober, clean, the quit gambling, pick one. I mean, he was a full-time job. And he just didn't listen. And he would take off. He took off. He'd be missing in action for a week at a time or whatever. And he always showed up. I mean, he was in Vegas and he'd call and he needed to come home. Well, by this time I had stopped to charge cards. I knew enough to do that by now because GA told me to. Anyway, I don't know how long we were together, and what happened was I had gone to an Al-Anon meeting during the second marriage, and I took this girl who just cried all the time. She was a friend of mine, and I couldn't fix her for the life of me. And our boys went to school together, and I would take the boys up to school, and then I would come back, and we would drink coffee and talk about how we were going to fix them, how we were going to get them to do what they needed to do. And she just never stopped crying. And she would tell me about if he wore his brown pants, he was gonna drink that night. But she thought he had a girlfriend. So I told her she needed to go to an Al-Anon meeting. And I would go with her. We went to this Al-Anon meeting, and I'm gonna tell you, it was on Monday night, and this was during my second marriage. And we walked out of that meeting, first of all, they talked about God. And you know what? There was no God in my life. Thank you very much. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be in the shoes I'm in right now. And we walked out of that meeting, and they told us to keep coming back. And I said, you really need to go back, but I won't be able to make it because the Steelers are home next Monday night. I got to go to the Steelers game, and I'm here to tell you I'm divorcing him anyway, so I don't need to come here. So I divorced him. That's what I did. And that's when number three came along. But anyway, so I saw what Al-Anon was. And what happened was they talked about standing at the window and, you know, begging God to get him to come home and praying that he came home. I didn't do any of that. I didn't do any of it. Well, let me tell you. By number three, what happened was one night, oh, many, 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 many things had happened. Believe me, you all know what happened during that time. The final thing that happened, for a while, the final thing anyway. But anyway, they talked about being at the window and watching for him to come home and praying that he'd come home. I couldn't relate to any of that. I was just getting rid of him. One night, Gene, my God, was at, he was missing. He was missing. Nobody knew where he was. His mother used to call from Kentucky and send me out to find him. So I head to this bar. And this bar is all glass in the front. And I get to this bar and, damn it, I'm gonna make him come home. He's gonna start to listen. This is crazy. So I get to this bar and I'm sitting out front and I'm laying on horn and I'm flashing my high beams because I know he can see me. I can see him. He's right there shooting pool. And can you imagine being that ugly? Anyway, okay, so I'm sitting out there and I'm doing this and it occurs to me, this is the only thing I thought was wrong with this. I was in my pajamas and a robe. I couldn't go in and make him come out. What was I gonna do? Somebody came out of that bar and said, lady, you gotta stop. And I said, you tell him to come out or I'm not leaving until he comes out. He came out and what he said to me was, if you have no respect for yourself, how can you ever expect me to respect you? And I'm gonna tell you, the next day I was at my first meeting. I remembered, not that I wanted to go to Al-Anon, because believe me, I didn't need Al-Anon. I just needed to know what to do to make him be who I thought he should be, or who I thought he was, really. The next day, I called that girl who I talked to the first day on her first day on our meeting, and I said to her, "You're never going to believe this." And she started laughing. What I can tell you is there was no question. I'm attracted to alcoholics. It's who I am. I mean, I don't know what else to say to that. So she kind of knew what was coming. She took me to my first meeting. And she told me, and I'm going to tell you, I came in here 34 years ago, by the way. I realized, because you guys always say when you got sober. So this morning I had to look it up. And this will tell you who I am. I never paid attention to when I came in. And a girlfriend of mine who her kids also went to school with my kids, came in January, and I came in July the same year, but I didn't know what year. And she was one of these people who keeps track of all that stuff. So she always told me, and she wasn't around for a while, and I did find out when it was, and it was 1983. So what happened was, when I looked it up this morning, I realized I've been coming here as long as I didn't come here, and I can still be as crazy as a bedbug. How does that happen? You know what? It just does. It just does. It's the isms. So I went to my first meeting, and when I came in these rooms, what they told me was pretty basic and pretty simple. And I know things are different today, but I thank God every day that they were how they were when I came in here. They told me a few things, and on my way to my very first meeting, what she said to me was, "And you keep your mouth shut because you have nothing good to say." And you know what? She was right. She was right. All I would have done was told you my tale of woe if I would have said anything. I didn't understand why they wouldn't listen to what he was doing. You know the old, "How are you?" Well, he drank last night. There was no me. There was no me. At this point, all I could do was keep above water. That was it. The kids were grown. I had already put on the show that, you know, we were this perfect little family. That fell apart. At this point, there was just nowhere to turn. So I really didn't have a whole lot of choice. I wasn't here by choice. I was here by default. And what I heard was changed attitudes can aid recovery. So I thought, if I keep coming here, you're going to teach me how to get him sober. And that's what kept me coming back for a while. One day at a time and a little bit at a time, they, from day one, were putting a focus on me. Not that I knew that then. I would go to meetings and I would hear the craziest things, like, you know, my son cut the grass and I criticized him for the way he did the, well, why wouldn't you? Isn't that our job to teach them how to do it right? I had no idea who I was or what I was about or why I was doing the things that I was doing. I just knew that I had to be focused on you, because if I was focused on me, I couldn't deal with what I was seeing. And I really couldn't deal with what I was seeing. By the time I hit here, he was right. There was no self-respect. There was no self-worth. I was just a nobody. I couldn't tell you what my favorite color was. But I could tell you, I did tell a therapist one time, she said, "What do you like?" And I said, "To be with him." She was, you could see the anger on her face. She said, "He has three addictions." I said, "I don't know what to tell you." I mean, what else could I say? It was the truth. But anyway, I kept coming back, and they told me to keep my mouth shut and listen, and all those things. They told me it was all about the slogans for me. I didn't need to think about those steps right now. And I'm going to tell you, I can still feel the feeling the first day that I lived and let live. The first day that I got through my whole day at work without thinking about where he was or what he was doing. It was just a miracle. To change my thinking, they told me, don't think. And you know what? Today, that saves my life. This morning, that's all I told myself, don't think. It saves me today, it really does. Those were the things that gave me that base. I believe that. Today I have a base that I'm going to tell you, it's about when something happens for me, it's not about going to the steps. That's too much right now. right now I need to keep this simple, or I need to easy does it, or I need to live and let live. I'm usually minding somebody else's business when I'm not happy. That's usually what's going on. I'm not happy with what you did. It doesn't have anything to do with me. So I kept coming back, and they didn't tell me things. I had no God, and I didn't want to talk about God. And they just kept telling me things like, just let it go. Just let it go. They didn't say to let go and let God. And I did. And I started testing some of the stuff that they told me to do. And I was my first sponsor. I did what I wanted to do. Make no mistake, I was self-will on riot. I did whatever I wanted to do, but then I called and confessed, is how I did it. And they would say, you're supposed to call before you do it. Well, yeah, I know. So dumb things would happen. Like I went out and I bought this car. They used to sell these cars. I don't know if they still do. I don't even want to buy one anymore. Anyway, it was this car. It was about this big. And he was missing in action again. So I sent him this card. And then I went home and I called my sponsor and I said, I did it. And I told her I sent this card. And the card came back with postage due. And what I thought was that was God. That was God. So time went on, and you know what? I kept coming back. I started getting okay. And by the way, I was so well that I stopped seeing him. And I told him we were through. And oh, I was so well. I was so recovered, let me tell you. So early on. Anyway, so we had split up, and I was moving on. I wasn't dealing with this kind of stuff anymore. And I started just enjoying AA and Al-Anon, and we went to those dances, and all this other stuff was going on. And life was good. Life was good. I was going to conferences. A lot of things were happening. I was going to a lot of meetings. I started working steps. I can remember the night and the meeting that I felt, not heard, not had in my head, I felt that I was powerless over alcohol. And that my life had become unmanageable, and that this was about me. It was so, wow. What those spiritual awakenings when I was new were just so huge. Anyway, I kept coming back, and I got real well and stopped seeing him. And his mother called me. Now, I can tell you, when I looked it up this morning, I could figure out how long I was in here. His mother called me. I'd been coming to Al-Anon for 6 years. His mother called and said, Gene's in jail. Can you go get him? Will you go see him? Will you take him cigarettes? I was in therapy at the time, of course. And I told the therapist, and he said, have you ever visited somebody in jail? Do you know what it's like to talk to somebody through? So I didn't go. I didn't go. I was so proud of myself that, yeah, I was tough. I'm going to tell you, he ended up in jail for 5 years in North Carolina. And guess what I did? I drove to North Carolina, not the whole 5 years, but the last, I don't know, when he was eligible, I don't know a whole lot about the prison system, believe that or not. But he became eligible to go out for the day and whatever, or a week, and then he became eligible for weekends and all that sort of thing. Well, let me tell you, I did that, not the 5 years, but I did that last 2 years right with him. I had a job at that point where I traveled. I made myself be in North Carolina every single Friday. I went in, I signed him out, and I signed him back in every Sunday. I did that for 2 years, about 2 years. When I think about that, and I'm going to tell you, it's because I was so well in Al-Anon, you know, and what happened was God, it was God's will. And that taught me, what it taught me was I can convince me that it's God's will if I want to do it bad enough. Nothing's going to stop me. And that's what I know from that experience. I went through the time while he was in jail. I waited is what I did. He came out, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you. He got clean and sober in there, and he got a sponsor, and all that good stuff happened. So when he came out, we were going to have that white picket fence, you know. And oh, my God, life was good. Life was good. He wasn't out. His sponsor, we used to go visit his sponsor and his wife when I was in North Carolina for his weekend passes. And his sponsor used to say to me, he needs to stay here when he gets out. Oh, not in his lifetime. Oh, no. He's going to Pittsburgh. You know, the arrogance and the that self-will that took place during those years, that I really thought that I knew, I just knew what I was doing. And I'm going to tell you, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, he ended up, he didn't stay clean and sober, not for long at all. And we did end up splitting up. I did marry him, by the way, while he was in there, because that was the only way I wanted to know. It was the only way I could get him out. They wouldn't let me sign him out. It had to be an immediate family member or a wife. So I married him. Of course I'm going to fix it. Okay, so anyway, he came home, and you know, he was home for a very short-lived period of time before he started whatever. Got a girlfriend, he was leaving, and here's what I'm going to tell you. He told me, I'm out of here, and he was getting high and gambling, whatever he was doing. And I'm going to tell you, I was under the kitchen table, I will never forget this. By this time I had a sponsor who had done the prison thing, and they referred me to her when he went to jail and when I was bound and determined I was going to be involved with that. But anyway, I was sitting under my kitchen table and he was packing his truck. He came home from jail with a t-shirt and his pants on him with the clothes he was wearing. And he was telling me he wanted the furniture from the game room and he wanted the bedroom, the spare bedroom stuff. And I was saying, sure. I was saying, sure. My sponsor, I was under the table with those long cord phones. I tell you how long ago that was. And I'm under the table and I'm crying and I want to phone with my sponsor. And she says, you just tell him no. He came here with a shirt on his back. He has not taken all that. And I couldn't do that. I did let him take some stuff, but not everything that he wanted. But what happened? What happened there was, while I was sitting under that table and I was thinking I was gonna die, I didn't wanna go on without him. What I knew without question was God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. And I knew that. I knew that. As much as it hurt, and I'm going to tell you, I had run from my feelings all of my life. I never felt, I just moved on. Just suck it up and move on. I never felt, I fought it. And during those days, that was when I knew I could feel. And I knew that there was a God in my life that would take care of me no matter what I did. And I can tell you today, I just don't question. I just don't. I know that God is there with me. I started with the steps. I went back to the steps. I loved it when he said last night, Harold/Jeffrey, when he said he was on step 9. I loved it. I also loved when he talked about his single mother. I mean, when I think about how I wasn't there for my kids and how they really didn't know, they really, when I started doing the steps and I got to that 8th and 9th step and I made those lists and I went to my kids and I told them, and by the way, I was, when my home group back then, we had an alcoholic who was in AA who used to come to our meeting also. And we'd talk about step 9, and I started crying. And I said, I can't make amends to him. And he said, as long as he's drinking, you don't have to. And it was like, oh, okay. So I kept working those steps, and I kept looking at me, and I kept taking care of my life. And the next thing you knew, my life was starting to work. And it was in spite of the stuff that I had done and the choices that I had made. They told me in Al-Anon that I had choices. And in all those times when I said I didn't have a choice, I did have choices, and I made them. I came in here a victim, and he did this to me. I'm here to tell you he didn't do a thing to me that I didn't volunteer for. That's the truth. I stuck it out. It was what it was. I don't know what else to say about it. When I kept coming here and my life started changing and I started seeing that there's a whole world out here, life is good if I just let God take over. When I get out of the way, that's when everything turns out okay. And I know without question that God does for me what I can't do for myself. I wake up every day today and I start my day with prayer. I had nothing to do with church and all that stuff. I didn't want anything to do with any of that. Today I'm back at church. I retired recently. And I'm going to tell you, first of all, I always said I could never retire. I mean, I went from bankruptcy. He was wearing $100 Rockports when he left, and I didn't have any shoes. And that's the joke. Those are the things that I have to remind me of, because I paid for those Rockports. I'm the one who did that. He didn't do any of that. Anyway, today I know that if I just get up, just wake up in the morning and turn my will and my life over. I said all those years that I could never retire. I would never get out from under that financial stuff that goes on with alcoholism. I don't know how. I know I kept going to meetings. I know I did it one day at a time. I know I turned my will and my life over to the care of God. I know that I looked at myself, and I could pay attention to what was going on with me, what my character defects were, what my contribution was to all of that. And I could talk to another human being and tell somebody else in those rooms who I was without being judged. I've never done any of this alone, never, never. God is always there with me, but my God speaks through you. It's about you, those of you who are here, those of you who have always been here. I can only thank you for being here. Anyway, I retired recently, and I never thought I'd be able to. I really did not. Last night, Harold also talked about his mother who just died 2 years ago. My dad was always where I came from. My parents were adult children, as I said. My mom was very, very angry. She was the reactor, and my father was the fixer. My father was my rock from the day I was born. She would chase me with shoes, and I was never one to listen. Anyway, all this wild stuff would go on when she was mad at me for something. And my dad was always the one who sat up with me and talked to me and, you know, that kind of stuff. He was always a fixer. Anyway, he passed away 2 years ago. And I'm going to tell you, I realized that he had always been that rock. And I got to retire recently. And when I think about where I came from and what my life is like today, I retired in, I don't even know, February or March, and it must have been March. I left for Italy like a week after I retired. Now, I'm going to tell you, I wanted to see Italy my entire life. I always wanted to go to Italy. I wanted to go to Italy. That's all I ever wanted to do. I had an uncle took me to Belgium one time, and I knew I was going to make it back to Italy. Well, it was a joke. I knew it was never going to happen. Well, I got to retire, and I got to go to Italy. And I'm going to tell you, that's because I come in these rooms, crazy as that sounds. That's all I did. That's all I did. I came here. I worked the steps. I did what I was told to do. You know, when they tell you to call your sponsor, I have no problem today. It's not like it used to be. Today, I call my sponsor, and I say, okay, here's what happened. Now what did I do? I know today that I volunteer and I'm in the middle of whatever it may be. I don't have a clue what's good for you. I don't. I really don't know how to tell you to live your life. As much as I used to think I could, I don't know how to tell you to live your life because I don't know how to live my own. I have to turn my will and my life over every morning in order for my life to be okay. And make no mistake, I can feel when I haven't done that. Today, finally, when I think back about all of this and the thing that brought me in the rooms, the total lack of self-respect, today I can tell you, I have self-respect. My children, I have a good life with my family, and you know, I don't know how. I don't know why I got that why I'm that blessed. I don't know. I went to meetings for years talking about my son who was working on his lead, and I'm here to tell you he doesn't have a drinking problem. I don't know how. I just say thank you, God, that he doesn't. My kids respect me. When I made my amends to my kids, you'll love this. They told me that I was just too nice, that it wasn't my fault, it was them. So, you know what, today my relationship with my kids is good, very good. We have unconditional love, and it goes both directions. I have a good family, and I thank you for that. And believe me, it's all thanks to you. And that's all I have. Thank you.